Okay, we'll start Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, three lines up from the bottom. Ki havu miftarei rabbanon. Okay, Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, three lines up from the bottom. Ki havu miftarei rabbanon mi bei Rav Chisda. Everybody okay? Yeah. When the Chachamim would leave the yeshiva of Rav Chisda, others say that this was from the yeshiva of Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni. So as we saw in the previous Gemara, they had in these yeshivas a standard parting bracha that they said to the Rosh Yeshiva. So what was it here? So Amrulei Hachi, they would tell the Rosh Yeshiva as follows. Alufeinu Misubalim, this is a pasuk in Tehillim. They simply told him a pasuk in Tehillim, which, as we'll see, they intended both as an appreciation of who he was and also as brachas. So what's this pasuk? I'll say the whole pasuk. Alufeinu Misubalim, Ein Peretz, Vein Yotzeis, which literally translates as our teachers are Latin. Okay? There's no breach, there's no departure, there's no outcry in our streets. That's the pasuk in Tehillim. So the Gemara is going to expound on what the intent of this pasuk is and what the brachas here are. You might be familiar with this pasuk. Many people say it on Matzei Shabbos before Ma'ariv, this parak of Tehillim. But whatever it is, what is the bracha and the pasuk that we just learned? So now the Gemara expounds the pasuk. And here's what they intended. Alufeinu misubalim. Our teachers are Latin. What does this mean? So Rabbi Shmuel, the Amrila, others say, was Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Elazar, they each gave different takes on what this phrase means. Our teachers are Latin. Chadomar, one explained as follows. Alufeinu batayra. You're our teacher in Torah. Umisubalim b'mitzvahs. And you are Latin down with mitzvahs. I hear the Mepharshim explain this to mean that what they were saying was, they were expressing that they were impressed by the fact that although he was so intently engrossed in Torah, he still somehow had time to be involved in much chesed, etc. That's what you often see, that the less time a person has on his hands, the more he manages to accomplish. While the people with a lot of time somehow can't get things done. But busy, that's it. Ask a busy person if you want something done. Yeah. Okay. Vechadoma. The other said, no. Alufeinu b'tayra over mitzvahs. You're our teacher in Torah and mitzvahs. U'misubalim, when we say that you are Latin, you're weighed down, b'yisurim. It means with suffering. Now this is interesting. Why should they be mentioning this? And what was this like a standard thing that all throughout his career as a Rosh Yeshiva, they all knew that they would tell him in advance, you know, 20 years down the line, they'll still be telling him, oh, look how much you're suffering? No, the point here is that the main point that they're making is that we learned from you not only Torah and mitzvahs, but we also learned from you how to deal with the challenges in life. Meaning, in the period that we were around you, we had the opportunity to observe how you took on challenges, how you dealt with challenges that came your way, and that was no less important a part of what we learned from you. Like we said in the Gemara earlier, that exposure to a Talmud Chacham is an added level of the Torah that you learn from him. When you see how he actually implements things in life and how he's actually responding to the challenges in life, that's a whole added level of lessons. Okay. So that's Alufeinu Misubalim. Our teachers are Latin down. Now the pasuk continues. Ein Peretz. There is no breach. What does this mean? So this was actually a bracha. He said, you have an illustrious yeshiva. May your yeshiva not be like the yeshiva of David. Hear that? What was wrong with the yeshiva of David? There was one bad apple in the yeshiva. Achitofel came out of that yeshiva. May your yeshiva have no such phenomena. There are no departures. What does this mean? Let your yeshiva not be like the yeshiva of Shaul. It was also a pretty prestigious yeshiva, but yet, Sheyotza mimenu Doeg HaAdoimi. Doeg HaAdoimi came out of that yeshiva. So, may your yeshiva not have any such phenomena. He wasn't the ger. I don't know why he was called that. He certainly was not a ger. Maybe he was just from that area. I don't know. Vein tzvacha, and there is no outcry. Shalotei siyosenu kisiyosei shal Elisha. Meaning, may our yeshiva, our group, not like be that of Elisha. Sheyotza mimenu geichazi. From whom? Gehazi came out. There was also a bad apple. Gehazi was Elisha's Talmud / attendant who messed up and kind of shamed the name of the yeshiva. The pasuk ends in our streets. This is a general bracha. May we not have a son or a Talmud who spoils his broth in public. That's an expression for going bad. Okay. So, that was their broth. Now we move on. This next piece is not really connected to the previous piece, except in the sense that it's another pasuk whose intent is being debated by the same people we saw before. So, now we're going to go on to expound a different pasuk. Shimo Elai Abire Lev HaChoykim Mitztoka. This is a pasuk from Yeshaya, which Yeshaya says, listen to me, the strong-hearted who are far from righteousness, who are far from tzedakah, from righteousness. Now this pasuk is cryptic. Is this pasuk talking about great people or about Rishoyim? You see, Rechoykim Mitztoka can mean one of two things. It can either mean the mighty-hearted who are distant from tzedakah, meaning they're distant from having to receive tzedakah because they have so many merits. They're distant from receiving tzedakah. Or it can mean harchokim tzedakah, the way we might understand it naturally. They're distant from righteousness, as in they're distant from performing righteousness. So let's see how the different chachamim explain this puzzle. So Rabbi Shmuel, either Rav and Shmuel or Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Elazar debated what this pasuk means, but both of them, whoever it is, here we have a machloikis, but everyone agrees that the intent of the pasuk is positive. We're talking about great people who are called the mighty hearted, and we're saying that they're far from tzedakah. What does that mean? So let's see. Chad Omar, one explained it as follows. They're far from righteousness, meaning far from tzedakah, we'll call it that way, far from charity. Kol olam kulo nizoinim mitzedakah. All the rest of the world get their sustenance from charity. Hashem provides them with charity. They're not deserving, they don't have any leg to stand on, and they're dependent on charity, Hashem's charity. Behem nizoinim bizroya. But these mighty people that we're referring to are actually get their sustenance through the merit of their own arm. They earned their keep. They don't need to come on to Hashem's tzedakah. That's a pretty powerful statement. If we think about it for a minute. What's that? Oh, okay. Let me ask a question along those lines. Is there really such a thing of a person who's deserving? The Sfarim tell us at length that it's really inconceivable that a person should be able to consider himself deserving. It simply can't be, because the moment you're born, you're already so deeply in debt. If you just take into account the whole process of being conceived and of being sustained through pregnancy, and then of actually making it out okay, and then taking your first few breaths, you're already so deeply in debt that it's going to take years to pay off. And throughout those years, you're busy accumulating more and more and more debt. So as far as your account with Hashem goes, you're born into deep deficit, and the deficit just goes deeper. Even if you're the most righteous person in the world, you're slowing the progress of the deficit insignificantly. We've said this a few times. Chazal say that a person really should say hallel for every breath he takes. So if you really know biologically what a breath entails, it's true. A breath is a very complex business. You should say hallel for every breath. So make the mathematical cheshbon. How many breaths does it take to say hallel? Now each breath that you're taking is necessitating another hallel. So you see that you're just accumulating a deficit, fast and furious, even if you're busy saying hallel your whole life. So if you're taking a few breaths without hallel, forget it. So what does it mean? There really is, and that's just breaths. There are other things in your life besides breath. So what's the meaning of a person who earns his own merit? Doesn't need Hashem's tzedakah. What can that mean? So, it can either give a more general pshat or a more specific pshat. We'll give both. In a more general way, this certainly doesn't mean that they are inherently deserving. As we said, there's no such thing. You start your life in deficit, and the deficit is just deepening. What it means is something else. It means that as far as Hashem's plan in the world goes, they are fulfilling it in the most optimal way that they can say, we're deserving in the framework of the plan. Meaning, sure, anybody who's in this world is just accumulating a deficit. But Hashem initially wanted the world to run. You know, Chazal tell us, initially the world was meant to run on Midas Hadin. Midas Hadin means no rachamim. It's absolute. You sin, you're struck by lightning. Right? Now, it says that the world could not run in such a way. So Hashem added Midas HaRachamim. Now what does that mean? It's a very strange thing. He has a few chazals like this. Hashem initially added mind to the world to run Midas HaDin. He tried it didn't work, so he added Rachamim. What does that mean? Hashem couldn't predict how it was going to play out? So the intent is something else. This is how the Maharsha explains these Gemaras, a few such Gemaras. He says, no. Of course Hashem knew that Midas HaRachamim was going to have to be added to the deal. But what Hashem is saying is as follows. This is an ideal situation. The ideal state that a person can be in is such that he can make it through life surviving at a level of Midas HaDin. Now, of course, most people are going to have to rely on the crutch of Midas HaRachamim. Most people. But the ultimate is for a person to be able to get through life without training wheels, without that crutch. Get through life, being able to say, I made it on the Midas HaDin level. And there were people who actually did. And that's what we're saying here. When we say they did it through their own merit, of course, anybody who's born is deep in debt. But we're saying their own merit in the sense of Hashem's original ideal plan. These people actually made it, made the grade that Hashem originally intended. And therefore, they didn't have to come on to that extra charity. They didn't have to come on to Hashem's indulgence. Right? No, the world was created with an intent. They lived that intent. They did not need to bank on Hashem's, you know, training wheels or his indulgences. Whereas all the rest of the world does. So that's what we mean here. So that's number one. They're distant from charity, meaning they don't need Hashem's charity fund. They can manage in the world the way it's meant to run. Now, explanation number two. Chadomah, the other one said, Kol Olam Kulay Nizoinim Mizkusov, even more than that. The rest of the world, not just that they bank on Hashem's charity, they bank on these people's charity. These people are busy providing the rest of the world with its merit. Meaning, much of the physical, of the good in the world is coming from these people. Vehem afilu bizkus atzmon ein nizaynim. But they don't even enjoy the benefits of their own merits. What does that mean? As follows. Ked Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. It's like Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. They call yoim veyoim. Every day. Basko yoytze smeha choyrim. A basko goes forth from Har Choyrim to Har Sinai. Moimeres. And it says as follows. The entire world is sustained on the merit of my son Chanina. Bachanina bni, and my son Chanina himself. So you think, all right, if he is the channel for all material blessing in the world, he should be very well to do. Right? Take what he needs, and he passes on the rest to the rest of the world. But no, that's not what the Gemara says. His diet was a kav. It's a small volume of carobs. Carobs is a very, very basic form of food. That's what he ate per week. A kav of carobs. I mean, he barely ate. And Lamaisa, he's the one providing all the rest of the world with their food. Okay. Now, so whatever it is, each, what's that? How do we understand that? So, well, we can understand it in a couple of ways. First of all, when we say Nizayim is Chusam, the point, the idea is, there are two levels of this. There's, sorry, he says, why should it be this way? That a person is providing for all the rest of the world, but he himself barely gets what he gets. Okay, so that's what the Chassam Sofer says, like Shlomo just said. The Chassam Sofer says, he got everything he needed. Just didn't need any more than this. Right? So they say, the seekers of Hashem don't miss out on any good. See what do you mean? There's all kinds of very righteous people who barely have anything. The chat is that they don't lack it. Plus it says they won't lack it. They don't lack it, they don't need it. They're happy with this. As far as he's concerned, that's all he needs. That's good. Now, chat that the rest of the world... It's not true. It's not true. He's fine with this. He doesn't miss it. It means nothing to him. He gets his pleasure from other places. More than the rest of the world does. He's living in luxury. He's having a happier existence. These people have a happier existence than the rest of the world. Rebelli Lapian says that's what nice answer. Rebelli Lapian, he explains that pasuk, Dorsha Hashem lo yasru kol toiv, that the secret of Hashem won't be missing anything good. He says, they don't have this and they don't have that, they don't have all kinds of things. So he says it's like a person, you have a sick person whose house is full of drugs and medications. He goes to his friend's house, he looks at the shelf is bare, no drugs and medications. He has one thing of Tylenol on his drug shelf. He says, how can you live like this? He says, I don't need any of it. That's the pshat here. Take a person like Reb Chaim Kanievsky. Say he doesn't know what he's missing. Let's say you would deliver to his house a hero sandwich with all the trappings. Reb Chaim, you never experienced this world. Have one of these. Wow, now I discovered, not the snitch. Take the hero sandwich and go home. He has his life. He doesn't need anything more. So now, the guy who doesn't need all the drugs and medications is the happier one. So you have a person who doesn't need all the material trappings is a happier person. A happier person is a person who doesn't need luxuries, not a person who has luxuries. A person who can be happy in life without it is a happier person. What's that? I don't know, maybe. But he enjoys all his food just the same. Mm-hmm. We're not saying they didn't take any pleasure in it. These people have Oinik Shabbos also, right? They eat cholent on Shabbos. But the point is, their life is not going to be enhanced by packing on more. Their lives are fine, right? They feel that they have the ultimate life. Okay. Now, Rav Dessler says that the pshat here is not just that they're so righteous, so they bring merit to the whole world. There's actually something conscious going on here. Both Rav Dessler and Rav Avigdor Miller explain it this way, each in their different ways. Rav Dessler says that the pshat is that he's out there actively trying to invoke merit for the Jewish people. He's trying to invoke merit for his generation. Like Yisrael Sishon says, when he goes through piety, describing what Hasidus is, a pious person, one of the elements is that he's concerned for the dark. That's what the great people of our people have always had, this quality. They're concerned for the dark. And therefore, Nizam Mishulchanina B'ni doesn't just mean he's so righteous and that's why he brings it on. No, it means that he's busy actively trying to schlep the blessing. Not asking for himself, but he's asking Hashem that the Jewish people should be in a good state. And they get it in that merit. Now, Rav Avigdor Miller says something along those lines, but he says not necessarily davening. He says all of his service is also with that intent. Part of his service is because he wants to elevate Klal Yisrael to a higher and more deserving level. All of his avodas Hashem is coming from Avas Yisrael. Meaning, we know that there are very many different aspects that can motivate a pious person. There's Avas Hashem, there's Yiras Shamayim, there's a sense of that this is the morally correct thing to do, all kinds of different things. One of the things that drives a pious person is a sense of Avas Yisrael. I want the Jewish people to be in a better state, and therefore I'm going to step up my spiritual efforts in order to invoke more merit for the Jewish people. So yes, he is involved in all kinds of inyonim of Bein Adam L'Makom, and he's busy doing chesed with the whole world. Why? He wants to add more learning as a schus for the Jewish people. He wants to daven better, schus for the Jewish people. That's Nizam Mishulchanina B'ni. He's out there trying to gain, earn things for the Jewish people. Now he himself doesn't need much of it. It's all pointed. He's trying to get it for everybody else. Okay. What? Right. Okay. I have to stress again that these are the main qualities of a Jewish leader, right? A Jewish leader is never a person who's detached, right? Whole concept of people with a very high-paying salary to be the so-called leaders of the Jewish people, busy sitting on their comfortable chairs and deciding what's the right way for people's lives to run, right? No. We're talking about people who are out there for the Jewish people's good, not out there for a career, and not out there for a high-paid Jewish leader is almost a contradiction in terms. Not quite, because there were kings, and that's a complicated subject. But I will say, I will repeat what I said in a general way. In a general way, a high-paid Jewish leader is a contradiction in terms. When we actually have kings, it's a different story. You see. What I mean to say is, I'm qualifying what I'm saying with the statement that sometimes, in order for a person to be a successful leader, he has to be in a position of influence, which sometimes will require wealth and pomp, etc. But that's kind of a technicality. But often, the fact that a person is a high-paid Jewish leader is actually just a contradiction in terms. So I'll say often, instead of a rule. Okay, whatever it is. We move on. Well, plague of the Rav Yehuda. Now this whole approach is rendering the mighty-hearted who are distant from tzedakah as the great people of our generation. Now this whole approach... Oh, by the way, I just want to give one other explanation. Chashuv explanation of Rav Tzadok HaKohen. What does it mean, the mighty hearted who are distant from tzedakah. So we asked before, what does it mean that a person is distant from tzedakah, from Hashem's charity? Everybody needs Hashem's charity. And Tzedek HaKohen says that there's one type of person who can come and demand things on his own merit. Mind-boggling concept. And what he said, he's a very specific trait. A person who is perfect in issues of Kedusha, meaning in issues of Tzemius and Erva. Any man-woman relationship and everything related to that, a person who is absolutely perfect in that realm is what the Gemara is referring to. Here's a whole Kabbalistic exposition, which most of which I didn't understand, but he shows, he goes through, picks different people in history, gives examples of people who are on that level, and therefore they were able to come and demand things on their own merit. Very unique concept. One of the examples that he gives is Elisha or Tzedek HaKohen. One of the examples he gives is Elisha, right, who says the Shunamis said he to an unnatural extent, Yaakov Avinu, never had a seminal emission, even at times when it would be natural, when it wouldn't have come from any problematic thoughts or activities, he never did. Like for example, it says that after a person is weary from a trip, he's likely to have an emission.
Weary from what?
From a trip. He never did. And it also says that that's what's behind the story of Choni HaMa'agel. Choni HaMa'agel had the chutzpah to make a circle in the floor and tell Hashem, I'm not leaving till you send rain. Right? And it was to the extent that the other sages were kind of horrified at what he did. But they said, but we can't mess with you, right? Shimon ben Shetach, the Nasi of the generation, told him, you know, that sort of thing warrants a chayr. And if it was somebody else, I would, but I with you, I can't start up. So, if Tzadik says, what was it, Lamaisa, that gave him that leg? How could a person come and say that to Hashem? He says it was this chus. This is something we're talking about, very, very rare people who can actually get to this level. I would imagine that, of course, it goes to varying degrees. But that's how it identifies this chus being referred to here in the Gemara. When a person is absolutely pure. I'm sorry? You got it. That's right. That was a Ben Shetach told him, I should put you into Cherem, but I should respond it. So what can I do? Okay, interesting thing to note. Now again, this whole approach of interpreting this pasuk in a positive sense, the mighty hearted who are distant from tzedakah, is referring to the pious, or plague the Rav Yehuda. This goes against... What's that? Oh, there's a specific area that you can test Hashem, Maisris. You can test in that one area. Not that you can come and say, in my merits, I want this and this. You can test that you won't lose out because of the Maisris you give. And it's controversial whether that just means Maisra of crops or even Maisra of money. Pashtus we pass in that it's even Maisra of money, but that's a very specific, isolated thing. Not that you can come and ask whatever you want. You can test to see that I won't lose out because of the Maisris I give. Okay. Now, plague of Rabbi Yehuda. This all goes against Rabbi Yehuda. The Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda interpreted this pasuk in a negative sense. He said, "Mana birelei, who are the mighty of heart?" He takes that to mean the callous of heart. The strong heart, it means the unmovable, the obstinate, the callous, who are distant from tzedakah, meaning they are distant from performing righteousness. Who's that referring to? Guyvay tu tipshoy. It's referring to the stupid Guyvayim. It's the name of a people. Rashi says these were descendants of the original Guyvayim. Whatever it is, it's the name of a nation. What is so callous about them? Omar Rav Yosef. Heida. You see, this is so. There was never a ger from them. Apparently, a nation from whom no ger ever emerged is a stain on their record. Amar Avashi. Avashi localizes this a little more. The strong-hearted, meaning the unmovable, who are being denigrated here, are the Goyim of Masa Mechatzia. Masa Mechatzia was one of the greatest Torah centers in Babel. It was a city. Jews and Goyim lived there, but it was one of the greatest yeshivas in Babel. So he says, the goyim of that town are the strong-hearted. The kachaza yikare deraisa treishate bezimne, treizimne beshate. They see the glory of Torah twice a year, but yet there was never a gear from them. Meaning, there was the yeshiva, which was always throbbing with life. But twice a year especially, before Pesach and before Sukkot, they had what they called the kala, the big gathering to prepare for the Yom Tov with shiurim and things. That was when you really saw the splendor of Torah. It basically blanketed the whole city. It says if they witnessed that and none of them were moved to become a ger, that's showing that there's a certain callous nature to this nation.
Why were they going to the Jewish event?
No, without going to the Jewish event, the street was full of it. It was like, you know, if you remember Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's Leviathan. Remember how then all of the secular press were blown away, right? All of Israel was blown away, right? Rabin, they talked about 1 million people being at his coming to the wake they had. Yeah, they talked about 1 million people coming. Now the problem with that is the traffic in Yerushalayim that night was fine, was normal. Okay, there were no traffic disturbances at all. Shlomo Zalman's Levaya had 300,000 people. All of Yerushalayim was paralyzed. The whole Yerushalayim was shut down. So the math doesn't really add up. Whatever it is, there was a Levaya, an old man died, right? And Yerushalayim, I never saw anything like it. I mean, anybody who's been there, unless you've been by Moshe Feinstein's Levaya. But the whole Yerushalayim shut down. Basically, the way one of the papers put it was, Yerushalayim lavsha shachor. Yerushalayim dressed in black. And you see a bird's eye view of like half the city covered with black. It was black people, you know, the black hats and jackets. And the impact that it made on the outside world was immense. There was a lot of uncharacteristic openness and honesty in the secular papers then, when they were writing things like, one of them wrote, we always accuse the Torah world of being insulated, not knowing what's going on outside in the world. So this writer wrote, how do I explain the fact that a man died and there were 300,000 people there, the entire Yerushalayim was paralyzed, and I'm busy doing research to try to find something on a man I never heard the name? This is what this man wrote in the paper. So this is the type of impression you have to realize, that this is the sort of thing that was going on there twice a year. These sorts of events. All of the Eden and Babel, again, Jews and Babel were very, very concentrated, and they all gathered in these places that twice a year. And they saw the glory of you know, how the Rosh Hashiva was treated, what Torah meant to the people. And this is something that went on for a few days, such a Levaya. Wasn't the Levaya. The fact that none of them were moved, no impact at all was made, shows something. I'll say this, they can even move the irreligious writers of the papers, it should certainly have moved these guys. Okay. We move on. What? No, it just said this is a nation that never had a ger. A nation that never had a ger is a problem there.
Gavonim at some point Suffolk Jewish?
What's that?
Where did the Gavonim at one point Suffolk?
They had come in the days of Yeshua. Rashi says that this was a specific strain from that nation. They had come in the days of Yeshua, but basically they ended up slowly but surely breaking back off. Okay, we move on. We refer back to the Mishnah. Chasan imroitze likrois kairu. Remember back in the Mishnah we saw a long time ago that a bridegroom is exempt of reciting Kriya Shema on the first night. The chassan also has to say Kriya Shema. Now, why? Because he's anxious about the mitzvah that he has ahead of him. So, the Mishnah concluded by saying, if he wants to say it, he can. But, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel said no. You can't act presumptuous. You can't come and claim distinction. It's just haughtiness. So now, Lemeimer de Rav Shimon ben Gamliel Chayish Liyor. So the Mishnah implies Rav Shimon Gamliel is concerned. He doesn't want people doing things that look haughty. Come on, you probably don't have the right kavana. Don't make shows. But the Chachamim don't care. It's okay. Some Tom, Dick, or Harry decides that he does want to learn Kriyas Shema for Chazan. They're not bothered by the fact that he's putting on pretenses. He's looking haughty. So the Gemara says the Ipcha Shaminan Lahu. But we see in a different instance, the opinions are reversed. It's not. It says in the Mishnah. Essentially, you're allowed to do malacha on Erev Tisha B'Av. But there were different minhagim. So in a place where the minhag was to work as usual on Erev Tisha B'Av, you can do it. In a place where the custom was not to do work on Erev Tisha B'Av, you can't do. What? I'm sorry?
Erev Tisha B'Av is a
Gersel? Erev Tisha B'Av, yeah. I'm sorry. You're right, Tisha B'Av. I'm sorry.
So
No, the first pasuk of Kriya Shema, Kavana is prerequisite. In other tefillos and things, Kavana is encouraged, but not prerequisite. The first pasuk of Kriya Shema, if you don't have Kavana, you're not Yotze. We learned that from Sukkot. So therefore we're saying, this person is not going to be able to have Kavana, so don't read it. The question is, do we tolerate a person coming and saying, you know what, I will. So now, we have these differing minhagim about doing malach on Tisha B'Av, right? I'm sorry. The kalmakai, now in all places, talmidei chachamim b'teilim. A talmud chacham should not. Okay? Talmud chacham, others yes. Shimon Gamliel oimer, la'oilam yaseh kol adam es atzma ki talmud chacham. Everybody should assume the behavior of a talmud chacham. Everyone is encouraged not to work on Tisha B'Av. Oh! So all of a sudden, Shimon Gamliel is saying, even though you're not quite on the Madrega, go for it! Why not? Not worried about pretenses, presumptuousness. So Kasha, there are Bonan, there are Bonan. Both seem to contradict themselves. By Kriya Shema, the Chachamim said, oh, you think you can have Kavana? Go for it! Even though it looks presumptuous. By Tisha B'Av, they say, Talmid Chachamim don't do work. You're not a Talmid Chacham. Don't put yourself in that status. Rav Shimon Gamliel seems to contradict himself as well. By Kriya Shema he says, don't put on pretenses. By Tisha B'Av he says, no, act like a Talmid Chacham, no problem. So Omer Abyechanan says, you're right. This is a problem. V'chlef et hashita. We have to revise the Mishnah. That's right, switch it around. Rav Shimon Gamliel, just like he says by Tisha B'Av, by Kriya Shema also, he says, you want to go for it. And the Chachamim, just like they say by Tisha B'Av, no, this is only for Talmid Chachamim, by Kriya Shema they also say, no, drop pretenses, don't say Kriya Shema if you're potter. Rav Shisha Breider of Idioma, le'olam lo tafu. No, don't reverse the opinions. There's no contradiction here. There are bonan loy kashka. Meaning everybody agrees that a person should not make himself stand out in a haughty way. A person should not act presumptuous. Yet, there are no contradictions here. Why? The Chachamim are not concerned by Kriya Shema. Why? Kriya Shema, kivan de kuleal mekakaru, they say, what's the problem? The problem is with making yourself conspicuous. I knew somebody used to say, this is a father used to tell his children when they would get a little too overexcited, he would say, watch out, your frumkeit is showing. So that's the point here. Don't let your frumkeit show. So therefore, by Kriya Shema,
don't show that you're too excited?
No, meaning sometimes when it was a way of putting his kids in place when they would get too big for their britches. Yeah, external frumkeit, yeah. So now, by Kriya Shema, this is not a problem. Why? What's he doing? Is he standing out? When he's sitting in shul, all he's doing is what everybody else is doing. Everybody is saying Kriya Shema. V'unami kakari. And he's saying it along with them. He's not doing anything conspicuous. So therefore, you're right. Might be a little presumptuous, etc. But there's nothing conspicuous here, and therefore it's not a problem. So Lloyd Mersley Kiyuara. There's no haughty behavior here, because he's not doing anything different than anybody else. Huh? Whereas by Tisha B'Av, no, it's conspicuous. Everybody else is working. The Uloikovit. But he's sitting, he's too pious to work. He's making himself conspicuous. He's standing out. Mezikiyor. That has a haughty appearance that we don't want. So therefore, yes, the Chachamim are understood. Kriya Shema isn't there. Tisha B'Av not. Shimon Gamliel is not a contradiction either. He says exactly the other way around. Kriya Shema is a problem. Tisha B'Av is not. Why? Because by Kriya Shema, what's the issue? The issue is Kavana. Now, this person is coming and declaring, most Chassanim can't have Kavana, but I can. So they say, come on. And Antahadi Deloy Moti Lichvuni Date. But we know, Lamaisa, if you're not especially pious, etc., you can't have the right kavanah, so just skip it. Drop the pretenses. But, Avalhacha, by Tisha B'Av, what is the person doing? What's the pious behavior? He's taking a day off. Does that look pious to anybody? Let's say somebody catches him not doing work. Somebody observes him not doing work. Well, the guy say, wow, that's a pious guy, he's not doing work. We'll say, no, this guy doesn't have a job. Look around. Every day there are pious people sitting on street corners not doing work. Yeah, they're idle people. So no, it's okay. You're allowed to show off on Tisha B'Av, because the only thing it'll do is make people think that you're a battler and you have no work. So therefore, he's not concerned about it over there. Okay, Hadron Halacha Ayakoyri, we'll just sum up the bottom line halacha on this, interestingly enough, is drops another level. And we say most people have kavana. A chatzin who can't have the usual kavana should not say Kriya Shema. So Taisus gives a very interesting twist on this. He says today every chatzin should say Kriya Shema. He says because today nobody has kavana. Now, it's all relative. Who do have kavana? I know that I have kavana, generally in Kriya Shema, it's halacha. Taisus says nobody has kavana, they mean you don't know the type of kavana that Chazal were talking about. The kavana that we have is not kavana. This is the kavana of Rabbeinu Tam. This is Taisus. Right? So Taisus says nobody has kavana today, and therefore it's fine for a chassan to say Kriya Shema. And he adds, he says, on the contrary, a chassan who doesn't say Kriya Shema is haughty. Why? Because he's showing, usually I have kavana. Today I can't have that same level of kavana. So therefore he says the other way around. You never have kavana anyways, just say Kriya Shema tonight too. And that's all. No, 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 he's not saying that. What he's saying is that the level of kavanah that Chazal we're talking about is not what we have today. Of course, we're obligated to have kavanah to our extent. But he's saying that level of kavanah even a chassan can have. When the Chachamim said that a chassan can't have kavanah, they were talking about the intense levels of kavanah that they have. Today, the levels of kavanah that we have every day, a chassan can manage with also. Okay. What's that move?